One of the best ways to earn more money is to start a side hustle. Part of growing your side hustle is working with the best tools to help you succeed. Shopify is here to help. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit $1 million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify's easy-to-use system allows you to set up a sales page, take payments, and start putting your new ideas and products out into the world with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to help support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beginners, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/beginners now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beginners. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card worth more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's ebook for free at stockmarketpdf.com.
Love this podcast because it crushes your dreams of getting rich quick.
They actually got me into reading stats for anything.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast,
led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern.
Step-by-step premium investing guidance for beginners.
Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Starts now.
All right, folks, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. Tonight we have episode 199. Tonight we're going to talk to fellow contributor Cameron Smith, who is also a CPA. He works with us on the e-Investing for Beginners blog. And he, as I mentioned, is a CPA. He's a very smart guy. And he's going to share with us some ideas about how to help mitigate losses. So Cameron, would you like to say hello to everybody and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Dave. Hi, Andrew. Great to finally get on the podcast. Been writing for you for a while now, so it was long overdue. Sadly, it sounds like I just missed the 200th episode, so I'll have to come back for that one, maybe.
Sounds good. So I guess tell us a little bit about what you got going on and what your focus has been on the blog and some of the things you wanted to talk about tonight.
Yeah, sure. For anyone out there that's read some of my articles on Andrew's site, I'm a pretty frugal value investor and a pretty cautious guy. So one of the things that really has caught my eye in the last year, and I've started to experiment with it, has been protective put option strategies. It's something that I learned about while studying for the CFA. And I think it's a really overlooked risk management strategy that's pretty easy for your average retail investor to take a stab at.
So maybe let's start at what is a put, and let's just assume we don't know anything about options at all. So what is a put and how does that help mitigate losses?
Sure. So pretty much a put option, it's an option to sell an underlying security. So that could be any security. It could be a market index as well. So you're buying the right to be able to sell that security at the strike price of the put option. And then, of course, you have the maturity horizon of the option as well. So at some point, it will expire worthless if it has never reached that strike price.
So you can think of it as like shorting a stock. And so I guess in the scope of the portfolio, what is the goal of, are we trying to buy and sell quickly, or how does it function within the portfolio?
Sure. So I'll go back to, it is a lot different than shorting a stock, because when you short a stock, you have potentially unlimited losses if that stock continues to go up. Whereas with a put option, all you can lose is your premium that you paid for the put option if it expires worthless. So it has that good aspect to it as well.
Okay. So I guess,
go ahead.
So if we get back up just a minute for beginners like me with this kind of idea, can you give me like a real life example of maybe how exactly this would work? So if I was going to buy, I don't know, let's say Apple or a company like that, how would this work?
Sure. So I got a couple examples in the recent article that I've written for Andrew. One of them I used was JP Morgan and the other was Tesla.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So with JP Morgan, so one of the underlying factors of any option price is the volatility. So JP Morgan is obviously a lot less volatile than Tesla. If we're looking at September maturity at the money put options for JP Morgan, you're only paying a 4.8% premium to hedge that position at the money up until September. So here we are sitting in June, that's July, August, September, that's 3 months worth of sort of insurance, you can think about it. For that 4.8 insurance premium you're paying, you can hedge a JP Morgan position for 3 months.
Okay. And then I guess how would that work with Tesla then? Because it's they're a lot more, like you said, a lot more volatile. So how would that
work? Very different ballgame with that. So Tesla, you're looking at a 24.8% premium for that at-the-money put option that expires in September. And when I say at-the-money, the strike price of the option is the same as the current trading price of the underlying security.
Okay. All right. So that makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. The way I do it with my portfolio, Dave, I use what's called a crosshead, and I have a long portfolio of various sectors and individual securities. And rather than buy put options on the individual securities, I just buy put options on the S&P 500. So it's called a cross hedge because you're not matching exactly asset for asset, but it still gives you that protection to the downs. And let me just look up the number here for what you'd be paying for a September S&P put option. You'd only be paying 3.4% premium to hedge a passive portfolio with a put option.
Can you explain exactly what that hedge would look like? So let's say you hedge the S&P and the S&P crashes 20% by September. What does that look like? What did the hedge do for you as far as return and versus what you paid for the premium?
Sure. So in that scenario, so you've paid 3.4% to have the put option, market's fallen 20%, your net gain on that put option would be, what is that, 16.6%?
Yeah,
sounds about right. 16.6%. And then don't forget, you stay long your underlying portfolio as well, because we're not talking about naked put options, we're talking about protective put options. So you're protecting your underlying position. So your underlying portfolio would have lost 20%, and this whole put option strategy would have gained 16.6%. So your net loss would be that difference there, which is in effect the premium that you've paid.
Yep. Yeah, it makes sense. So basically the upside is if we have a market crash, assuming that the stocks in your portfolio crash and the market also crashes, then you have protection on the downside. And then it's like you said, like an insurance policy where if the market doesn't crash by September, you're out the 3% in premium.
Exactly. And so you always do have that risk of the option expiring worthless. And I've had that happen to me before. So it's probably been a year and a half that I've been experimenting with this. And it was actually quite fortunate. I started experimenting with it before COVID hit. So I was actually pretty much fully hedged when COVID hit, but of course, never really thought COVID would get that bad and the market would do what it did. So I only probably sold my put options, protecting about 15% of the downside there. But it was still really nice to have, and sort of was the proving factor to tell me that it can work. Because yeah, looking back last year, the market was already expensive pre-COVID. Now we're getting over COVID and we're even more expensive than we were before.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea for sure. And in particular, if you feel very strongly about where valuations are and where the market is going. And it is interesting too as well, where based on how volatile the market is, how much you'll have to pay for that insurance. And I guess when you're looking at for yourself, is this something that you plan to have a hedge for the rest of your investing life, a thing?
No.
That would be
no.
Like my first part of the question. Okay. Yeah, so how do you determine like where, I would where say or sort when of, to put a hedge?
Yeah. So I would say really in times of excess, like when we're sitting 1-2 standard deviations above historic market average levels, I'd say that would be a good time to put a hedge on. And the other thing, because like we're talking about volatility is such an important part of the pricing. The interesting thing that happens is as the market goes up and just melts up, as we call it, volatility always becomes really low. So these options get really cheap. So the market doesn't even have to fall all that much and volatility can pick up as well. And these things also end up quite in the money. But yeah, not a strategy to do every year of your life, for sure, because it's really going to affect that compounding power of your portfolio. Because on an annualized basis, you're looking at 7.5% to hedge, which really is the market return that you'd be expecting to get over the long term. So not something you want to be doing every
year. Like anything else, there's no free lunch. But
yeah,
to your point, if you feel strongly about where the market is, and you can have some potential upside too, where if the stocks in your portfolio happen not to fall as much as the market does, now you're gaining on both ends.
Yeah, exactly. Because like I mentioned, I'm doing a cross hedge here as if my portfolio was totally passive, but I'm probably 75% active, 25% passive. And as it comes down to stock picking, can you pick stocks that are going to perform better than the market's going to perform as well? Yeah.
A specific loss, or is it more about trying to hedge the whole market?
But yeah. So for me, it's more about trying to hedge the whole market. But if you're an individual investor who is a little cautious about one of their holdings, for sure, you can just do one of the holdings. But that being said, the more risky that holding is, the more you're going to be paying for this put option, as we saw in the case with Tesla. Yeah.
So would it make any sense to put these kinds of options on companies you don't
own? Yeah, you could do that for sure. That would be losing the protective put option strategy of it. It would become a little more speculative at that point. But yeah, you for sure could. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it has the benefit, unlike shorting a stock, where you don't have unlimited losses. All you can lose is the premium that you paid.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
I think the big thing about it is too, when you buy an option like a call option or a put option, it gives you basically effective control over 100 shares. So when the stock moves like 1%, you could gain like 10%. So it gives you like the effects of leverage without needing to be leveraged. Cameron said you can only lose what you put in. And so that's how like only paying 3% can give you a gain of 10%, 20%. Whatever it is, if the market goes down,
yeah,
because of that kind of amplification factor. And I know where your mind's going, Dave, because when I first heard of this thing, I may not have dabbled as well. And you instantly want to effectively short and buy puts against the stocks that are very expensive. But Cameron was saying in the example, those tend to be more volatile because they are expensive, because they are these really high multiple stocks that have huge drop downs, and it makes it really hard to make a profit when they do crash, because that's what they do and you're paying for that volatility. And so I think it is difficult to, like you said, Cameron, to pick stocks that are going to go down, because it can get speculative.
Yeah, for sure. But once again, it is a little safer than shorting this stock.
So what's the time length of how long you can put these kinds of options on?
Yeah, that's a good question. It really depends on who's writing what options, because someone has to write this option for you to be able to purchase it. So right now I've seen the March 2022 option on the S&P 500. And I've recently seen the December 2022 option spring up that people have started writing on. So we're looking out like a year, 6 months there. So yeah, so quite a long time frame. For myself, I try and keep it around a year is what I do. And then I roll it as it gets close to maturity to not let it expire completely worthless.
And these do not have, do they have a monthly or an annual fee that they charge to put these on?
Nope.
Okay. No.
Yeah, just the time decay of that maturity and premium expiring.
All right.
And the other thing that I've noticed that's worth mentioning is with like most profitable companies and the index in general, the longer you look out in maturity, the cheaper you're paying per day for a put option, because that company or the index is making profits and naturally going up in value. So your fixed strike price, as you go out in the future, it becomes less valuable. So the longer you go out in maturity, the cheaper you're paying per day to hedge. So that's an interesting point that I've found out.
First, you probably know the bad news already. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. As a finance nerd, you would assume that I have my money game all together. Well, shocker, I didn't. Until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, help me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on things I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all your tags and categories. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
We've got a very different kind of sponsor for this episode, the Jordan Harbinger Show, which is a podcast you really should be listening to. And I know that every day someone tells you that you just have to listen to some podcast and you nod and say, sure, and then you never listen to it. Don't let that happen here. Jordan's show, which Apple named one of the best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusion about what's happening even inside your own brain. Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest, and when I say there's something for everyone here, I really mean that. In one episode, Jordan talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI who offers techniques on how to get people to like and trust you, which sounds useful and disturbing at the same time. Another episode tells the story of a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle and made one of the most important archaeological finds of the century. For example, I also recommend our listeners check out Jordan's conversations with Dan Ariely about why people believe irrational things and Mark Andreessen about exploring the power, peril, and potential of AI, both spectacular episodes. Jordan's always focused on pulling useful, practical insights out of his brilliant guests, and we're not talking about pop psychology or wishy-washy self-help stuff here. The episodes are loaded with bits of wisdom that you can use to legitimately change your mind and improve your life right away. If that's not worth checking out, I'm not sure what is. We really enjoy the show, and we think you will as well. There's just so much here. Check out jordanharbinger.com/start for some episode recommendations, or search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, there are some tidbits on that in the article soon to be posted on Andrew's website as well.
All right, so we've talked about put options and the insurance that can help with hedging your portfolio. Let's talk a little bit about the companies that you choose. So when you're looking at buying a company, what is your process? How do you work through from finding the idea to pulling the trigger? What is the process for you?
Sure. I think screeners are a really important thing for every investor to use, because screeners is where you're going to uncover the gems that you never knew about before. If you're not using screeners, you're just going to be sticking with the same stocks that you read about in the news and that everyone else is exposed to, a bit of a herding mentality. So I think screeners are always a really important idea. And I have a couple saved ones on my broker that I refresh on a weekly basis and see what's changed and if any new names have sprung up that excite me.
Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. Then after that point, I have sort of one metric that to me is it's the be all end all for that initial back of the envelope math. And I have an article on e-investing for beginners on this. Actually, it was my first article I wrote for you, Andrew, if you recall. It's I've coined it investors adjusted return on equity. And it's very similar to the Shiller PE, which takes 10 years earnings and adjusts it for inflation. But here I'm looking at 10 years average return on equity as a percent. And then I'm multiplying that by the price to book value that you're paying for that equity. So you can think about it in terms of an equation where you have return on equity and price to book value. And if you combine those together and cancel out likes and likes, you have an earnings yield. And that will quickly give you an idea of, okay, if I hold this stock for 10 years, I can expect an average return of 10% at this price to book value. Now, it doesn't work for every company, especially tech companies who really don't trade there accordingly to book value and companies that repurchase a lot of shares, but it does still tell you quite a lot about what you're paying for book value and what the return on equity is of that business.
So can you explain return on equity for a beginner who isn't aware of the concept and also why it's a useful tool when looking at companies?
Sure. So return on equity is the net income of the company divided by the equity of the business. So you can think of it as the owners of the business have contributed all this equity, and how much are they earning per year on the equity that they've contributed? Yeah. And then what the Shiller PE does and my own sort of investors is it looks at that average over 10 years so that you get the business cycle in it as well. So as a long-term investor, I'm fine with a couple bad years and it might even be a great opportunity to buy.
So do you have a threshold that you look for when you're looking at that kind of
investment? Yeah. So I'm generally looking for like that 10%. So what would a passive investor be getting over a long-term time horizon? And that's my hurdle rate.
All right. So after we find a company that passes your hurdle rate, where do we go from there? Where do you take the next steps?
Sure. So after I find a company that sort of meets that initial hurdle, I'll take it a step further and I'll really start analyzing the financials. I'll look at the balance sheet, income statement, cash flow. I'll look at it on a historical basis. I'll look for things like share buybacks, good return on equity, good return on invested capital, good debt levels, and then I'll start making projections into the future. And I use a model to do this. I've actually started selling it on e-investing for beginners with the help of Andrew, which has been great. And it's up there for anyone to purchase. And pretty much you can plug in a couple years of historical financials. It'll calculate various ratios for you to help you project into the future. And it's all pretty automated. Once you punch in those couple years, you can then play around with growth levels, with different debt levels, and it'll really spit out a bunch of different valuation metrics for you, from discounted cash flows to a growth model. And yeah, I develop really 6-7 base valuations, and then I'm looking at an average so that it's aim small, miss small when you get that average valuation level.
So this is something that I use as well. It's one of the tools I use for my stocks, particularly with the DCF model. So what a DCF is, it stands for discounted cash flow. And it's basically how Warren Buffett analyzes the valuation of a company. And Cameron, you mentioned you're studying for the CFA. This is something they teach in the various classes on valuation there.
And for sure. CFA, university classes. The DCF is, it's really your golden boy in terms of valuing a company, because at the end of the day, it's all about the cash flows to investors.
And so I guess a couple basic inputs, you have to make an assumption on what you think the growth rate is and how risky you think that growth is going to be, and then how much cash flow a company makes. Mm-hmm. And that's how you try to come up with a estimate for how much a company is worth. And so it can pinpoint you more than comparing like a price to earnings or price to book would, because you're building these different things in. And I like the model just for the DCF part. And I like how I've customized it and made it into my own, where I can use it for the companies I'm looking at.
Yeah, and, it's totally customizable with what
right.
you
want.
The thing that I like about it, and one of the things that has really been helpful for me, is you can see, I like the way that it projects future different, it projects different metrics as well as different items from the financials into the future, so that I can look and see how realistic my projections are. So in other words, if I'm looking at a company and I am projecting that, hey, it's going to grow 10% over the next 10 years, then I can see how much that really is going to be. And then I can, in my head, look at it and go, is that really a realistic number for the revenue? And one thing that I've started doing is, if it's a smaller company, let's say it's a smaller market cap company, and it's in a market that has a couple of big players in it, then if I look at that projected revenue growth over 10 years and compare it to some of the big boys in the sector, and it's blowing them away, then I can go, well, maybe that's not realistic. So that can help give me a sense of whether I'm being, a little bit too enthusiastic or not.
Yeah, and especially when you're looking at smaller companies that are growing and comparing them to bigger guys in the industry, you can look at things like how their gross margins or operating margins will change as they get bigger and develop into one of those big players, and see, okay, is that already built into the valuation that the market is giving it, or is there still opportunity there to be had?
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing I liked about it too was the ability to adjust things so that you can try to find a range of values, as opposed to just trying to find the one perfect price, because sometimes you can make small adjustments and you can see what is having a bigger impact on the value of the company, whether it's the debt load or whether it's the revenues or whether it's the margins. All those things have an impact on how you value a company. And it's kind of cool to see with the model, it weighs everything out so you can see it. I'm a visual person, and so I like to see that stuff, and that's very helpful for me.
Yeah, yeah. You have a lot of sensitivity analysis that you can do there with all the different inputs at play.
So how long did it take you to create this thing?
It took me a couple weeks to create it and a year to perfect it, I would say. Yeah, kept on adding in sort of more evaluation metrics as I got. Because once you get the projected financials, you can build in a bunch of different things. So as I kept learning different valuation metrics through the CFA and my other studies, I just kept on adding in more valuation metrics to that football field of valuations that we give on the front tab there that build into that average.
Yeah, that's very helpful. So when you're using this kind of model, was there company types or styles of industries that you felt like this was a better fit for, or is this kind of a one size fits all kind of model? Is that Was that kind of your hope for?
Yeah, I would say it's really a one size fits all, because it gives a lot of flexibility in terms of what you're looking at and how you want to look at it. So if it's a company that's financially distressed right now, you can be paying close attention to the cash flow projections and how bad are things going to get in a year, in 2 years, and what they need to do to turn it around and how realistic that. And if you're looking at your one of your big mega caps that's a steady grower, you can look in. So how much of that's already being priced into the valuation as we look out in time, and what's the chance of them beating that from your perspective? But yeah, they're very flexible in terms of what it can be used for.
Nice. So let's say that you find a company that you really like and you go through all this. Is there anything in particular that you look for that is maybe a red flag that would make you go, no, we're done here and move on? Or are there things that you'll work through and maybe normalize over a longer period if you see something that's lumpy, for example?
Couple red flags for me are always, and normally this I'll catch these before I even get to the point of putting it into the model. But I always, first off, I'm looking at a return on invested capital that's really above an economically appropriate level. So when we talk about return on invested capital, we're talking about the returns to both debt and equity. We were talking about return on equity before, but there we're looking at just the equity people. So return on invested capital, both debt and equity. And that needs to be an economically sound level. And I typically look for something about 7%, depending on the industry, which gives it the potential to be levered up so that your equity holders are getting that 10% return that I look for. So that's the first rule of thumb that I look for, is a 7% return on invested capital. And then the second thing that I always look for is share issuances. I find that that can be a real red flag if a company's issuing shares on a constant basis. It proves that they can't grow under their own weight of it. Yeah. And I don't like my equity being diluted.
Who does?
Yeah. That makes three of us.
Who does? No, that's awesome. All right. So let's say it passes all the tests. Then are you a margin of safety kind of guy? Or what would hold you back from pulling the trigger? Is it, do you go through the financial part of it and do you start looking at maybe some of the quantitative or the qualitative? Start looking at some of the qualitative type of ideas as well?
Yeah, I'm probably more of a quant guy, Dave.
Okay.
But I definitely have to like the industry and the long-term prospects. I'm not too much concerned with the industry. Like, I'll go anywhere and do anything if I can get that valuation and investors-adjusted ROE that I want. So yeah, I'd say I'm really more heavily on the quant side. One other important thing whenever you're doing a DCF or valuation is the WACC, the discount rate that you're going to discount the cash flows at. And that's something we've built into the model as well, where you can go and grab the specific figures for the company that you're analyzing. And just, you got to be really careful there that you're really using a conservative discount rate, or else things can easily start to look very rosy when really they're not, and you're just being a little aggressive with that discount rate. So I tend to really keep my discount rate stable around 8%, 7%, and really don't get too aggressive with it.
I guess that's where the value of you having multiple models in there comes up, because then if your DCF is like through the roof and all your other valuations are telling you that's not the case, then you're like, well, maybe it was my discount rate.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I will go lower for like really great companies. Like, I'll go down to 5 and stuff, but that's very rare.
Yeah, I have a similar kind of mindset to that too. Thinking about somebody who's maybe just starting out, they're wanting to dip their toes into looking at valuation models, looking deeper into the financials. If you could kind of go back in time and think about when you were first digging into that, would there be something you would say to that past version of yourself to help him along the way of not getting too overwhelmed, because it is a lot of jargon and a lot of parts to financial statements?
Yeah, sure. I had one teacher back at university. I think she told us to sort of Google one word every day and slowly continue to build your vocabulary and your knowledge, and don't get overwhelmed. And yeah, read the business section and stuff as well. But yeah, just be curious and explore. And yeah, do it until your brain hurts and then take a break.
I like that philosophy. Then go outside and take a walk. This has been great. A lot of good ideas on the show tonight, Cameron. We definitely want to thank you for coming on and sharing with us, from having a portfolio hedge to digging deeper into companies and trying to find value in a arguably overvalued market. Always a tough sell, something that people who are in the trenches trying to find stocks, we're dealing with that all the time. And it's good to hear your thoughts on that and some ways that people can try to navigate that. So tell us about, if they're interested in more of your work, how can they find out more about you and the model that you've been discussing?
Sure. So my model is available on eInvesting for Beginners under the products page. And you'll find I also have quite a few articles up there as well. I think over the years, it's probably crossed the 50 mark for sure at this point.
So I guess we can search for you, your name, Cameron Smith. To be clear, it's not the Australian golfer who's on TV all the time. It's Cameron Smith, the finance guy.
Yeah, Cameron Smith, the finance guy. I often confuse with the Australian golfer. Yeah.
Do you have a similar haircut?
No.
No, you don't rock the mullet?
No, not anymore.
Same handicap?
Same handicap, though, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wow, I'm impressed.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely think people who are interested should check out the blog post you did. You can go on the website.
Protective put option. Yeah.
Okay. Search protective put option. You can read all about the hedge. If you search investor adjusted ROE or return on equity, you should be able to find that other post that we referenced, and all good stuff. And hopefully we can talk to you again.
Thanks a lot, guys. And congrats on nearing your 200th show next week.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you very much, Cameron. We really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us tonight. It was awesome.
Thanks a lot again, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day. The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at eInvestingForBeginners.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.